I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Outer Sanctum is recorded on Wurundjeri land. We pay our respects to the elders of the Kulin Nation, both past and present.
Good plan. Who thought of this one?
You're listening to the Outer Sanctum podcast.
Here is a moment in time in the history of the AFL.
In from the side, Houghton. She was surrounded by blue jumpers.
Welcome to the Outer Sanctum for another week. My name is Emma Race, and I think I've seen you here before. To shake the tree of stories from the land of football this week, I'm joined by my fierce, feminist, angel-faced teammates. I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hello, it is Lucy Race here.
Hello, it's Rana Hussein here.
Rana Hussein, it has been a hot minute since we last heard your dulcet tones on this fair pod. How's tricks?
Oh, tricks are good and difficult and all the things.
And all wonderful. The things in between.
Yes, exactly.
Since we had you on the pod, you've had a few changes, and we would love to ask you about where you are working at the moment. What are you doing, Rana?
I am the new AFL CEO.
Nice. Kept that quiet.
You get the exclusive though.
I love
team.
It. Congratulations.
Thank you. No, I'm CEO adjacent though. I've started working at Champions of Change Coalition, which if you don't know is a not-for-profit that works with CEOs on gender equality. And it's basically asking CEOs from all kinds of industries to really step up when it comes to gender equality. And so my job is to wrangle the sports CEOs and get them to come to the table and think about what they can do both for their organizations but also collectively, which I have to say for me is a really new ball game. I'm so used to being with communities who feel marginalized, and now the tables have flipped for me and I'm talking to mostly the guys, because it's mostly guys at the top who can make all the decisions, and it's quite a journey.
You've been having the conversations for a little while now with this particular cohort. Are you optimistic?
I am, and I'll tell you why. So we, in our last meeting, we had a really robust conversation about transgender inclusion, which was bubbling away and then kind of exploded globally when swimming globally banned transgender athletes from competing, and then international rugby did the same. And so the thing that made me really hopeful was that by and large, the sentiment that came out of that meeting was the importance of inclusion and how important it is that sport turns up for everybody. One thing that was really, I guess, hit my heart was this concept of no one should have the dream of being an elite athlete taken away from them. No child. You know, that is what sport is. We sell hope. Mm-hmm. We should have the right. Every kid should be in their backyard kicking a footy thinking, I'm going to be the superstar. And the moment we do things like blanket bans, when we don't have data to back it up, it takes that away from young people. And so that's the hope that I have now.
Can I ask before we move on to the actual pod, it's like we're interviewing.
I know, I'm loving this.
How important is sport to the conversation of change? Because obviously we think it's super important, but your organisation doesn't just speak to sports leaders, it speaks to industry leaders across multiple different types of industry. So how important do they rank sport as the cultural change cornerstone?
Really, really importantly. I think there's a number of kind of rocks that need to move to gain traction when it comes to equality. And that's things like what the government does, what the policies look like. That's also kind of what big institutions do and what workplaces can do. And then the other one is social norms and cultural norms. And the biggest player in that is sport. And so I always, you know, I have my days in this job and in my previous jobs where I think, is this working? Are we doing, are we actually getting anywhere? Or what's the point? This feels really niche. And then I remember actually, no, this is one of the biggest drivers of culture, not only globally, but especially for Australians. And so if sport can really turn up in conversations about equality, then it does move the dial. And champions of change are really clear about that. And that's why they have a sport group.
Commonwealth Games are on at the moment, and I really feel like it's a very different temperature this year. The Com Games feels very doesn't feel like a school watching a school of Stedford cosplay of sport. But I think we're so spoiled by how much sport we can watch now on all the different platforms that it's really hitting me differently. My kids, I had to explain to them like four or five times what the Commonwealth Games were because it feels like it's not seeping in. Am I alone in this? I feel like it used to be so massive, Lou.
I think what the issue is that we've just had Summer Olympics and Winter Olympics. I don't know that we're built for big global sporting competitions just on top of each other. And we need a little bit of space and breath. I think we've had the Euros in soccer as well. There's been Tour de France, Tour de Femme, so much sport that it's quite overwhelming.
It's barely enough though. To quote Roy H.G. Rana.
I feel like I constantly renegotiate my hierarchy of like what's important to me in the sports tournament landscape. And I feel like as someone who hasn't delved into the Formula One, I feel like Formula One for the two of you just shot right to the top.
Only the drama of it. Only the show. I've got to be really honest. I thought I'd wake up and watch it, but I don't.
No, okay.
I do check results.
I check results, yeah. The thing is this, what remains is the highlights of footy always make my heart sore. This weekend, Chole Dunkley Fogarty's old school hangers had me just going, this is what our game's about. Mark of the year is my, I think in my hierarchy, marks change everything for me. I feel like that's where our game is set apart from any other game. And when I see someone take a hanger like that, I feel so parochial and embarrassingly proud of our game. I love a hanger. I think I love it more than a good goal.
What's the noise that you make when a good mark happens?
Oh, like my something- God, did you see that? I wish that there was a 360 rotisserie. I feel like that's the next bastion, right? That you could get like an actual camera doing a 360 angle. Yeah. Absolutely love it. But I did have a really funny moment watching Isaac Rankin's goal. Did you see he takes this amazing mark actually because it was a really tricky ball to get to. And then he passes it off to Miller. And then he takes off the mark and the guy who was on the mark just tries to chase Miller and then Miller kicks it back to Rankin and then Rankin kicks the goal. And it reminded me of cutting the cake, which we used to do in netball warm-ups. Do you know what cutting the cake is?
I do.
Yeah. So you're standing in a circle and someone's in the middle and they throw the ball out then you throw it back and then you swap spots and then it cuts in the circle of the cake. And I felt like that actual move is something that I think now people will actually try and emulate. I feel like that we might see that again and again and again. And then people will be like, should I stand on the mark or should I chase the guy with the ball? And I actually think that's how this game is so wonderful because it keeps evolving. And that's, of course, where I've got to with rules, that the rules always change because we're always trying to find different ways around the game. Lou?
Did you see, talking about, you know, the way that players try to sort of work the rules, did you see Shea Bolton had taken a mark and there was somebody right on him and he looked like he was going to handball it and he was trying to draw the 50-metre penalty?
It's so naughty.
It's so
naughty. And to be honest, I think we've talked about this before, Rana, where you go like, can someone explain the soft cap? And just because you don't know the soft cap doesn't mean you're not a good footy fan. I'm now at this point where I'm like, if you don't understand a rule or if you can't watch it and go, oh, that was, or this is what this call should be from the umpire, it doesn't mean you're not a good footy fan. Because, in fact, watching this weekend's games, the commentators, the players and the umpires at times did not know what the rule was and didn't know how to effectively enact the rule. We saw a really weird goal review when actually it wasn't even relevant. There was some really strange things happening. I feel like people have just thrown the rule book out and gone, I don't know anymore. Someone just tell me later.
I feel like it's a really good time, though, to be a fan in the outer yelling, oh, what was that for?
To choose your own adventure.
Speaking of choose your own adventure, Lions and Tigers, you know, I can't tell them apart. And then when they almost have a draw, I don't know where I am. I'm all over the shop. Rana, was that just so hard to watch, or did you feel like the Tigers are just adding grey hair to you every week?
That was such a bananas game. I was sitting at the game and had written them off. I mean, and I will say I'm a negative supporter. I have to just own that. I will always assume that the team I love is going to lose and then just be delighted when they don't. And then the way Noah Cumberland just kicked goal after goal after goal, it made my heart sing. And also the fact that coming after the game he had last week and that really heartbreaking moment of the draw, that I just thought, oh, this is quite the redemption for Noah. But it was so stressful. I don't know with the Tigers, like, they now potentially make the finals. How far do they go into finals? Is it worth it? I was sitting with someone who sort of was like, well, it doesn't really matter. I don't think we're going that far even in finals, but it was a thrilling game nonetheless.
Lucy, what were your highlights?
Well, Noah was one of mine because I thought, you know, coming back from last week and doing what he did, I loved something Damien Hardwick said about Noah Cumberland, which was in talking about the way that he's gone about trying to improve his footy smarts. He said he's got his notebook, and it made me think maybe he's, I guess, following in the footsteps of Matt Rowell and has a notebook. And I love anyone who thinks journaling is a good response or a good way to learn. So I think that's good. I thought this was a real reality check round. Very interesting. We've only got 3 rounds to go. And I think Fremantle, Carlton, St Kilda and Brisbane all had some losses that they won't be happy about. The Bulldogs played Geelong, so they're sitting 10th. There's a few teams just outside the 8 that potentially are going to move in. So I think I can't help but look ahead to next week where we see, I think there's 4 really juicy matchups with Melbourne playing Collingwood, Port Adelaide playing the Tigers, the Lions and the Blues, and then the Cats and St Kilda. And those 4 games will all have some kind of bearing on where things end up. You couldn't script this season to be more interesting, really.
No, and this is where my lack of maths really doesn't play into my favour, because I always struggle when we're talking about the ladder. But that third quarter, my other highlight was the third quarter from Geelong, which was genuinely terrifying. I think they kicked like 8 goals, 2 or something. And I just thought, it really is theirs to lose, except that if Melbourne get their heads right, they are formidable, right? Surely they can flick a switch and get back to where they belong, in my opinion. Tell me it's going to happen.
I don't see it for Melbourne this year for some reason. I think it's Geelong's. I think I completely agree with that. I think they're terrifying right now. And it's so weird because they epitomise it's a long season. They just grind away. They Shawshank the rest of us. They're just constantly picking away at us. And they never quit. And they seem so cohesive. I hate how much I admire Geelong. And that is another thing that happened to me this weekend, was actually my highlight, is how I don't hate Collingwood anymore, purely because I have loved seeing how they take their kids into the circle to sing the song at the end of the game, and they don't scream it really loudly because they don't want to scare their kids. And I'm like, this is game changing. Hats off to whoever thought that was a great idea to start doing it. And it really, I guess it really resonates with me, because it wasn't that long ago, sitting at the Peter Crimmins Medal, I was the number one ticket holder at that point of Hawthorn, and there was some really old guys who were on our table who said the Brownlow was better when women didn't go, and they had been stalwarts of the club. And it broke my heart to hear people talk like that. And I thought those same people probably hate little kids being on their dad's hips during the song, but the difference that it makes and the way that it humanizes the players, the way that it shows shared responsibilities and duty, the way it brings family in, I feel like it travels a distance that is almost immeasurable. I really shouldn't like Collingwood, but this makes me love them. Are you both ready to roll up the sleeves on your matching grey male sweatshirts and melee?
Sure am.
We sure are.
Your sister's from another dimmy store.
On pod day, we wear male.
Okay, we're not going to back up over this too much because it's been a massive discussion point in the last 7 to 10 days, the Pride jumper at Manly, 7 players electing not to wear the Pride jumper. Just a reminder that Julia and Rana had a really thorough and intense conversation about this. A few people have tweeted and retweeted that episode, and it's still available for you to listen to. And I know that it's a really challenging conversation, Rana, for you, but I think it's challenging for everyone. For me, it was the rainbow washing the tip of the iceberg. I really felt like what we discovered through this moment was that Manly hadn't really done the work in the base of the iceberg, and this rainbow washing doesn't really serve anyone, and in this case it caused harm. There's a couple of articles that have been out there. Lucy, you dug in and you read some of the stuff, and I know that it's really personal for you as well. How did you go with it?
There are some differences in this situation at Manly compared to the ones that were faced in the AFLW earlier this year. Some of the articles that I read really fleshed that out quite well, particularly one by Samantha Lewis for the ABC, where she talked about performative gestures versus genuine cultural change, and really talked about how you can't just be celebrating inclusion. You actually need to be from bottom up driving cultural change. It needs to be led not by the top. It needs to come from players. There needs to be education. It can't be something that marketing decides to do because you think it might drive jumper sales. That's me saying that, not Samantha. And that in doing something badly, you can actually do more harm. And I think that's the thing that really broke my heart this week. The thing I loved about this article was Samantha interviewed Eric Dennison, who is the head researcher at the Sport Inclusion Project at Monash. I would really highly recommend that you read this article if you haven't done. We'll link to it in the show notes. The thing that he talked about was that when they're done well, Pride games are actually something that can drive cultural change. And that when that happens, that you can see an impact in terms of decreasing homophobic language, but you can also see a decrease in dangerous ideas about masculinity that can lead to gender-based violence. So Pride games as such, if they're done well, can actually be a really great tool in driving cultural change, but you can't do it just by popping a rainbow on a jumper and telling people to wear it.
This story made me think of you, Rana, because of the work that you've done in diversity and inclusion, the fact that one of the first times we met you, it was at Midsummer, and Richmond was really closely aligned with the Midsummer Festival, so is Hawthorn. And I kept thinking about the work that you've done, but also the work that I've seen Collingwood do with stand-up events, Hawthorn's Pride group, where Lucy and I are really connected to them. And I just thought this just wouldn't happen at those clubs because the educational piece is really dense and it's been there for a really long time. And while I know that St Kilda and Sydney are so far in the men's the only teams that have that play in Pride jumpers on and have their own Pride game, I do feel like the AFL is very prepared and very ready. I feel like all the players would be quite prepared and ready should this visit them.
I think the clubs have done a lot of work, and I really think the clubs are the ones that are lifting their game in this space when it comes to AFL. And I do think that the AFL themselves have a little bit of work to do. There's a bit of catching up there. And I've had those conversations where somebody, a leader in an organisation, said, oh, well, why don't we do a Pride round, or why don't we have a jumper? And it's really awkward and hard being the inclusion person and saying, hang on a minute, we haven't done the work. We actually need to get a few things sorted first before we go there, because you don't want to stamp on someone's interested and actually might be coming from a good place, and you work so hard to get their engagement that when they do suddenly go, oh, cool, let's go, you're the one that has to say, hang on, we need to do this safely. But I've had those conversations and they've always paid off. And that's why we kind of partnered with Midsummer at Richmond. That's why you take a couple of years to build the confidence of the organization to then go out more publicly. And it's just every inclusion and diversity expert that I've spoken to since that Manly story broke has been like, has had their head in their hands and just thought, this is so frustrating. And I felt exactly the same way. Sam's article, and we'll put it in the show notes, is 101 reading. Like, I think any sport organization that wants to do inclusion work needs to read that article. It was so well done. And one of the really fascinating points in it was that you actually can't lump minorities in together. And it's something that people have said for a long time, but when we do blanket minority groups under words like inclusion and diversity, we are always going to be asking for it. And so what was really beautiful that that article teased out was that you actually have to deal with a problem. So we need to deal with homophobia. We need to deal with racism. Now, that then means that organizations sometimes throw their hands up and go, well, how can we possibly do it all? And I think we have to be comfortable with sporting organizations saying, okay, we're going to do this bit and we're going to do it well, and then we're going to move on and try and grow that into something else. Sometimes we ask a lot of organizations and people trying to do the work. Sometimes no strategy is better than a kind of half-baked one.
Thinking about what happened at West Coast in the AFLW this year, they had done the work but they didn't have the jumper. And that now, in light of the Manly decision, it's so concave and convex, isn't it? They were disappointed that the work hadn't been done to ensure that they could be a part of the Pride Round wearing the jumper because they'd done the work. This story feeds in somewhat, I think there's a connection there to an article that Ben Abitangelo wrote for The Guardian talking about racism after some Aboriginal players and a Muslim player were trolled by racists both online and at games in the last couple of weeks. The line of no room for racism, which is the, you know, very easy response, harder to enact and harder to actually get people to embody. His article was fantastic. Actually, it reminded me as well of people saying gamble responsibly. Lucy, do you want to tease out and talk about what that article was kind of positing?
Yeah, his main contention is that slogans are meaningless if teams are then partnering with entities that are detrimental to groups, particularly to First Australians. So he raised a number of examples where he talked about different clubs and their sponsors and how the message can get quite muddied, that, you know, you might have the Fremantle Dockers who are speaking out against racist abuse that their players have been targeted with, but at the same time they're sponsored by a company like Woodside, who's proposed an expansion to the Burrup Hub LNG plant, which is threatening Murujuga, which is a priceless cultural treasure on the Western Australia's Burrup Peninsula. Likewise, he looks to the relationship between the West Coast Eagles and BHP and Port Adelaide and Santos, and even the AFL and Telstra, who recently had to pay $50 million in penalties after signing Indigenous customers up to contracts that they maybe didn't understand or couldn't afford. The main thrust of this article is that we need to acknowledge the structural role that wealth and whiteness plays in sport. That includes where the money's coming from. It kind of also reminded me of a discussion that's going on about the Commonwealth Games. There's been some great articles about fairness in light of the transgender bans that you mentioned earlier, Rana, in swimming, and talking about how it's, you know, we're trying to get a level playing field. And then you've got Malawi versus Australia in netball. I'm finding it hard to celebrate how successful Australia is at the Commonwealth Games, because I know that is due to our wealth and our privilege and our whiteness in many cases.
It's a real problem for sport, international sport here, and sport and development. A similar conversation came up with regards to the Australian women's cricket team and wanting to play more test cricket, but they can't play more test cricket because other countries aren't there yet. And what does that mean? And what does that mean for the legacy of the Australian women's cricket team as well? Like, it is so fraught. Coming back to the sponsorship conversation, I think this is where, and it's like, it's easier to talk about and harder to do, but I think this is where like values are so important. Organizations will throw around values all the time, but actually the purpose of having values is to be able to lean on them when it's time to make calls like those as to who you partner with, who you get into bed with. That's what your values are for, fundamentally. I love it now when I see organizations say, well, our value is equality, so we're not going to partner with this, money be damned. And that's, yes, a risk, but I kind of love it.
Where I saw those two things coming together was how many people were saying, hang on a minute, you won't play, and this is in regards to the Manly conversation, you won't play with a rainbow on your jersey, but you've been playing with a gambling sponsor for the last couple of years and that doesn't worry you. I do think that it's a bit upstairs, downstairs, because sponsorship is not a conversation necessarily that the players are involved in, and they do want to get paid, and that's where the money's coming from. I don't know how much power they actually have to take on the organization about those, with those conversations. They're the ones that are out there wearing that name on their shirts. And I would imagine that after reading an article like the one that Ben at Bertangelo wrote, that it would be really confronting for a lot of players, and that not just for First Nations people, but also for people who, you know, want to be good allies, and for people who really believe in conservation, that would be really challenging. I'm sure that there's lots of people who struggle with the gambling stuff. Like, we say no to things all the time because our values, we know what our values are, and we're really lucky that the 10 of us have really good coverage of shared values, so we don't have to have really difficult conversations because we all are on the same page about what we stand for. But when it comes to a commercial venture, I think that I really feel for the players in those moments, Lou.
Well, I think, you know, we've seen it as well with players who are wanting to be more outspoken and to take more action in terms of fighting climate change. And when you've got a number of fossil fuel companies and mining companies who are involved with so much money in the game, it's hard to look away from the argument that, you know, is sport trying to greenwash itself as well. But I do feel that there's a difference when you're talking about individual players and the stands that they're making and the action that they're taking, because, as you said, Em, they don't have the same power in that decision making around sponsorship.
I do wonder if this is one of those ones where that is the power that they have. But if a couple of them started to say, hang on, I actually don't want to play with that logo on my jumper, what that would say to the sponsors themselves and how sponsors would start to then interact with the players, just like we saw Hashim Amla, for example, in the cricket say, I'm not going to wear an alcohol brand because of my faith.
This is where I could have a spin-off pod about the LIV Golf Tour. I don't know if you've been following that story, but this is not a golf podcast, and I won't make people endure my rants about Phil Mickelson, but it is really confronting. That is real tip of the iceberg stuff. Golf is going to split in two, quite obviously, and it is money driven and it's not values driven necessarily. And I don't think that the game will ever be the same ever again. And I think they're going to lose history and heritage. Maybe that's actually a good thing because it has been such a privileged and traditionally white sport, but they're going to have to reinvent themselves in a new way.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sam Mostyn, and you're listening to The Outer Sanctum.
There was a story this week, and there was one quote I pulled out that just shocked me because I just didn't know that the broadcasters saw themselves in this light. But it said, Fox wants its own commentators for footy. This is talking about how it doesn't want to take Seven's feed of the footy anymore because it doesn't want Seven's broadcasters, because it sees itself for more rusted on fans. And I found that really challenging and problematic. And I also feared for, say, making the call, which is obviously Lucy and my beautiful project that we love so much about diversifying broadcast teams. I just found it a really strange way to characterize themselves, because firstly, it suggests and posits that there's a certain type of fan that more rusted on means that they want something different. I also did wonder if it was a direct response to the fact that there's Daisy and Abby, and that there's kind of a broader appeal. Like they said, Seven's broader appeal, almost like it was a dirty word. And I was like, Seven's broader appeal has one woman calling. Like it blew my mind. Lucy, are you shocked that this is how they see themselves?
I am shocked. And the other thing I think about is that Channel 7's free to air and Foxtel isn't.
Totally.
I think, you know, we've been talking a lot about crowd numbers and the reasons why people might not be going to the football. I think that a big reason why crowds are staying away is that, I mean, has anyone listened to the economic news recently?
No, I'm head in the sand on that one.
You can't even afford petrol.
We've got rising inflation. We have rising interest rates. The cost of living is going through the roof. We have a housing crisis. We have natural disasters where people are still living in tents and unable to get their homes fixed. And then we have a pandemic. If you think about the priorities of most people in terms of what they're spending their money, what people spend money on, it's cost of living. And things like football memberships, going to the game, and subscriptions to paid TV don't necessarily fit into that. And so, oh gosh, there's a lot of money talk today, isn't there?
Yeah, but the economics of talking about your rusted on fans as being people who would pay for the service as opposed to the broader appeal of a broadcast that's free for all, I would find that terrifying if I was the AFL.
Well, it's akin to saying that you're only a true fan if you've paid membership.
For it. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And also the demographics that they're going to kind of put forward as their calling team says so much about who they think the Rusted On fan is, and that there isn't diversity in the fandom already. Like it just, you know, I know so many people in my community, Indian Pakistani Muslim community, who have watched football their whole lives, who love it, who would pay for KO, who would want to see more diversity on their screen. Like it just, the assumptions in it, like when I saw this article, that line stood out to me as well. And you know that music in Kill Bill when Uma Thurman just like zeroes in on like that's what happened in my brain.
Did you put the yellow tracksuit on?
Did you put on the yellow jumpsuit?
I went for the yellow jumpsuit. I was just like, right, who do I need to speak to absolutely crack this open, because it really upset me. And I just despair. Maybe that's all I have to say. But people also aren't watching the football as much as they used to. That article spoke about a 10% drop. And I don't know that going after the rusted on fans, then whatever that means to them, is the solution to that.
Look, I could be jumping to conclusions about what I think they mean when they say rusted on fans, but I mean, they could be saying we want to have Kelly Underwood on every single broadcast and she's sitting here and we could be, you know, hearing from her, and I'm assuming that that's not what they mean. So, but it just really did, it stood out to me, and I feared for our national game when they're going down the wormhole of saying that you have to pay money to be a rusted on fan, I guess, is my point. And doesn't grow the game. It just doesn't grow the game. And for women's footy, I really want that to have very broad appeal, because that's the appeal, right?
Absolutely.
Totally.
Well, there's another story this week where money and fans, traditional fans of AFL, Australian Rules Football, is kind of coming together, and that's around the Tasmanian bid for a 19th licence. The club presidents are going to be presented with a plan to vote on in a few weeks' time, and it seems to all be coming down to a stadium. In initial talks, the Tassie government included in their pitch a state-of-the-art stadium to be built in Hobart, which be a stadium that would have a roof. It could be configured to have rectangular games as well as the oval for AFL, and that they would also be contributing $150 million over the next 10 years. Since then, Tasmania's seen a change of premiers, there's been a change in the federal government, and as we've talked about, the economy's having some issues, including a very big deficit. So this stadium that has been talked about has been rumoured to cost about $750 million. I wrote that down because I'm not good with figures, but that's a lot of money. And last week, Gill met with Jeremy Rockliffe, who's the new premier. There's now talk that the Tasmanian government and the AFL are negotiating over who's going to pay for it, with the government saying that they're not going to pay any more than half and the AFL saying that the government has to pay the majority. And I don't think those maths work. Gill this week said, "This team needs and will have a new stadium if you want a license. And I think Tasmanians would expect that." And I kind of ask the question, would they? Is that something? Do we need shiny new things? What is the value of getting a team in Tasmania and having a fully national competition? Do we need to have the big shiny stadium, which I think is something that broadcasters might want? What do you guys think?
I just didn't understand the question because we've been playing, there's games down there all the time, and I know that they're not from the actual Tasmanian team, like North Melbourne and Hawthorn have been playing games down there, but there are stadiums to play in, and to make up these weird rules and say it's because of a stadium that you can't have a team, I feel like that's just, again, saying, sorry, you need money to play this game. You need the best and fanciest shoes going around. I just don't see that that's even the point.
Is it about making sure that whatever team is fielded is starting at the same standard that everybody else is, with the same kind of facilities?
But no one has the same. It's not equal. And, you know, it's interesting because from what I'm hearing, it's Sydney and the Gold Coast who don't want it to happen because they still need money coming from the AFL and they fear what will become of them. But, like, Sydney doesn't have, and maybe they have a point, Sydney doesn't, they don't get to train on the SCG the way that other teams get to train at a home ground. But the other thing is, you know, there is no equity. Oval training there is not the same as training at Hosh's paddock.
Hosh's paddock.
Shout out, Tanya.
Hosh's paddock.
We should change it. It's not equitable anyway.
No. And isn't this what Geelong have been saying for years, that our oval is completely different, so we're, you know, hard done by? Like, I think we can deal with it is the point. Like, we can get this team up and running and we'll manage whatever comes next. And yes, there might be some pressure points there, but is that really, like, are we gonna gatekeep on this issue? It just seems so strange.
Well, and it's such a lot of money. I'm normally Pollyanna, but I'm a bit suspicious here that talking about the stadium as being a non-negotiable gives the AFL an easy way to kind of, if it doesn't happen, say, oh, well, we couldn't agree on the stadium.
It's very who's going to pay for the wall, don't you reckon?
I know. But look, I read a really interesting article, which we'll again include in the show notes, that kind of talks about the fact that there's a north-south divide in Tasmania, that there's need for investment in all parts of the state. You know, $750 million is a lot of money to spend in one part of the state.
If I were a Tasmanian who really wants this to get up, I would be praying for a Brendan Gale sized deus ex machina to come in and just like save the day, get it done, because he's all for it, right? And he seems to be the front runner.
Is he still the front runner?
I don't know. It's
because this is the other thing that you hear from these other interstate clubs, that they don't want to have a Victorian CEO. This is what we've heard before, and is one of the main reasons because of Tasmania. Is it because they just want to put a line through Brendan Gale?
Potentially. I mean, Brendan Gale's been pretty public on his support for it. So.
Lots of people are being really public, and I love that. I actually love that they're doing a really good PR job, but they've got all the Tasmanian players are saying, we need it, and they've got everyone on board. It really worries me because, again, it sounds like locking people out of the game. It's like what you said about, you know, when you say to people there's no transgender people performing at the highest level in these sports, all of a sudden that means that the transgender kids hang up the boots or don't get in the pool or whatever it is. And I think if Tassie people, they've given so much to the game. They pay their memberships. They've been getting along. And I know how frustrated I've been that we haven't had a Hawthorn team in the AFLW, and I've just had to share my love across other clubs and other teams. And I've done that for six seasons. But Tassie's been doing this forever.
Yeah. I love the idea as well. I think it was Alistair Nicholson who said this, that it's on the people who don't want it to make a really good case for why it shouldn't happen. And I don't know that a stadium is that. I think that's kind of like, nah, that doesn't cut it. Give me another reason why this shouldn't happen.
Yeah, that's really
interesting. Well, it's interesting because they need a firm majority when the club presidents vote. I think the AFL would like it to be unanimous. It doesn't have to be unanimous. They would like that, but they do need a firm majority. So Alistair Clarkson's been very, very involved in this. And, you know, he was overseas last year or earlier this year doing some research, and he's brought some of that research back for this pitch.
I would love to see him be the coach of the Tassie team. I'm like, disrupt, disrupt, disrupt.
I would love that too.
We just mentioned the polyamory of AFLW. It's getting very close now. Gemma Bastiani's doing the countdown. She's more countdown than Molly Meldrum right now, talking about how many days there are left until the AFLW season kicks off. And my kids, as you know, are very duplicitous in their hearts because they don't want to disappoint either of their parents. But they went to Carlton training on Saturday. They've been spending a lot of time at Hawthorn, and they got trolled by Daniel Harford, who said, "Get out of here, you Hawks scum," to the kids. To which I said, he did used to play for the team, so I feel like you should have just served that back.
Yeah, I think I've seen Daniel Harford at some Hawthorn functions just quietly.
I loved it. But this is one thing where I have really changed my mind. I think when we started this pod, we used to talk about being team changers. Now I'm all for it. I'm like, I've had my mind changed by circumstance and by listening and by the love of a good friend called Rana, who can basically love two teams, love more than two teams even. And I'm feeling really good about it. I think that I think the way that I justify my polyamory in AFLW is that I go for players and I go for story, but also I am brown and gold at my core, and this is going to be the biggest moment in our actual human lives.
It really is, isn't it?
I think we're going to be unbearable.
You really are going to be unbearable. I'm ready. I'm ready for it. I've loved watching this evolution from you. It's not just you. So many of us, because of, you know, the staggering of the AFLW competition, have had to adopt lots of different teams. And there is a bit of angst around, okay, how do we manage this now? And I have been just so interested in how you two specifically are going to manage this. And I want to know, like, have you thought about it, about kind of any ground rules for yourself? And then I wanted to offer you some guidelines.
Great. I'll take the guidelines. I'll take them.
Well, I am taking the heart wants what the heart wants approach. So my heart tells me when I'm watching a team. It's not something I can always kind of be theoretical about. I have to be in the moment.
You're the magic eight ball.
But I just, like Emma, watching the team that I've supported my whole entire life run out with a women's team is going to be just extraordinary, and I can't wait for that. I think that where I'm very lucky is that I've looked ahead in the fixture, and the team I have been supporting for the number of few years previously will not play Hawthorn. So Melbourne and Hawthorn will not play each other this season unless they play finals. So I get to defer any of those thoughts. I know that I felt just as gutted when I saw Eliza McNamara's injury as I would have if it was anybody playing in a brown and gold jumper. Honestly, I think when it comes to the players, you don't see jumper.
Well, firstly, welcome. This is a wonderful place to be. You get double the wins, double the mascots, and double the game time. So your weekends might get a bit busier. But we've got a few guidelines, but I think, first of all, you do have to adopt an open marriage mindset. Where
what you... is that, Rana?
There were three of us in this marriage. Let's quote that every week.
That's the motto of multiple teams. It's just, we love everyone and everyone's equal in this, and it's all very fluid. So there's no colour blocking in this world. My first guideline has a caveat. My first guideline was pay the membership, because if you've paid your membership, there's not a lot that anyone can argue with that about. Having said that, if you can't, you can't. That's fine as well. Number two is get comfy with discomfort. So there will come a time where you think, oh my goodness, how do I manage this? Is my heart big enough? Spoiler, it is. But there's just going to be a little bit of like, oh, which way do I go here? And maybe I might have to work out a way to split into two. You fully barrack for your sides and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. find your inner zen when fans from one of your teams shit talk your other team. So this will happen. And you will just have to, the onus is on you. If you're going to have two teams, you just kind of have to find some chill and just let the shit talk happen. And it just has to kind of wash over you. You should try to keep up to date with both teams. And if one of your teams drops in your interest, then that might be a sign that you actually do just have one team and you've just been trialing two teams. So you've got to keep an eye on that stuff. If both your teams win in a round, this is a really important rule, you must not celebrate too much publicly to avoid being a douchebag.
Oh, that's that then, because you know that
you cannot be too smug when both of your teams will, and that will probably teams win. And that will probably happen. So
this is,
you just
when you say that, I see Bridie O'Donnell wearing an AFLW Bulldogs jumper while she's on the Collingwood board and getting, you know, run out of town because people can't handle it.
It's risky. You are rule breakers. This is not for the faint-hearted, this caper. Have a regular footy self-care routine. Because you're at risk at the end of each round of both teams losing as well, which is a really uncomfortable place to be. And in the case of finals, you're entitled to a full weekend of wallowing and avoiding all footy chat, which is what I did in 2018 when Richmond and Melbourne tanked in the prelims. And my final guideline is the go footy rule, which should be activated when your two teams play against each other, whereby you can neither win or lose. And so your only role is to bask in the joy of footy.
The go footy rule. We might have to put these out on social media, Rana, because there's a number of people. I think it's not just us. I think a lot of people will be
facing
this. I
would love some more because I do need them from time to time. Have to remember, I've got two teams and it's not always easy.
I had a footy merch idea. It's going to cross some lines. And it's going to divide some people. But firstly, I was thinking about, you know, when you see those tradies who wear shirts or jackets that have got the inbuilt fluoro on them. So it's like a blue shirt, but then the fluoro top panel. So they don't have to wear a fluoro vest anymore. They just put that on and then that's a one piece. And I thought, why can't I get a footy jumper version of that? Because footy jumpers on women in the outer of my age, it's not comfortable. I don't want to wear that. No. And I actually can't really fit something on underneath and still feel good about myself. They're so tight. Often the ones that you buy at the merch store aren't really cut for women because they're men's jumpers, right? And I was like, I wish I had a jumper that was the footy jumper but with grey male sleeves all built in, so it's a one piece. Do you know what I mean?
Like the shirt, it's like a jumper with a – it's just got the collar and the cuffs.
Exactly, so it's that. Like you're wearing... I think they're called dickies. Yeah.
Oh,
like, really? You could even have a collar. Like if it's a Melbourne jumper, you could have a little chambray collar attached. I would love that because I really struggle with finding something that goes under a Hawthorn jumper for me to wear to the football, unless it's grey male, but then it's often a bit too bulky underneath a footy jumper. So I'm like, why isn't there an all-in-one top that I could wear?
I love this.
But I'm taking it next level and suggesting that I could be able to get one that's also reversible on the other side. It's Carlton.
Now we're talking, right?
And you can get a bespoke one. So, like, I feel like I could go on Etsy and get this made or something.
You totally could. This is now how we diversify our revenue. I love this from you. I've never been able to wear a footy jumper. It's my body. It's not great. It doesn't work for me. This would solve all my problems because I do have footy jumper FOMO when I go to the footy. I always do a scarf, and then because I wear a hijab, the beanie always, like, it doesn't really work. This would solve all my problems. And so warm. I actually don't know why this hasn't happened yet.
I feel like we've let the cat out of the bag. Someone will get onto this, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's a real money spinner.
Someone get out the Janome.
Speaking of merch, I just want to say, want to ask you both. I've been packing up my house recently and I've come across a lot of football merchandise and I realized I'm one of those people that buys merch and doesn't do anything with it. And I wanted to know, because you're three Peters, what have you done with all your premiership merch? Because that also has pride of place, right? And I'm very nervous about touching it. What have you done with all your merch?
Full disclosure, I have none.
Same.
I don't exit through the gift shop.
Neither do I.
Really? You're not into merch?
I'm not. I keep my scarf from that year. That's a lucky scarf.
Okay.
The others get recycled.
I don't even get a new scarf every year because of
I don't anymore.
Yeah, it makes me feel stuff makes me feel sick. Stuff makes me really feel really landfilly and unwell. The only thing that I did keep, and I don't know where it is at the moment, is a Buddy Franklin coffee mug, which was a gift, but now it's ironic because he's wearing the number 23 and a Hawthorn jumper, and sometimes I just like to have it around the house to remind myself that he did once play for us. I buy the books. If there's a book, a three-peat book's just come out, I'm very hopeful I'll get it for my birthday, and I would always buy any kind of book that comes out. Lucy just took a note when I said that. I buy a book, but I don't buy items to wear, and I don't buy anything that hangs on the wall either.
No. I actually had kept all of the newspapers through that, you know, at the end of each premiership, and I just threw them out the other day.
You can Google it.
Yeah.
I just thought, if I haven't looked at them in the last, like, when am I ever going to look at them?
What do you buy, Rana? Is it clothes or is it pendants for the wall or posters or what is it?
Bobbleheads. The bobbleheads freak me out, so I will not partake, but I have mugs and I have T-shirts and I have pennants. For the wall. That's it. And then I do like bespoke merch, but again, I've stopped buying them because they do just sit and collect dust. And I've recently just cracked open the D's Premiership mug and started using it, which triggered this thought because I felt like that was a bit sacrilegious, but I thought...
No, I think use it.
You got to use it, right?
I put
a poll out on Twitter to ask people what they do, and I got 304 votes back, and 58.9% of people said that they wear or use their merch on occasions. 24% said they wear it every day. So use your merch is the lesson here.
That's interesting, isn't it? I have a lot of footy jumpers now. I have a lot of Hawthorn and Box Hill footy jumpers, and they are absolutely my pride because growing up we only ever had one jumper to get us through all time. It got very tight. It had a big brown woolen collar. And it had to get us through a very long time. Cut the sleeves off that, you know, somewhere in my mid-teens to give me a bit more time.
You cut the sleeves off everything.
It's true, I did, let's be honest. Trick for young players, don't cut the sleeves off a woolen jumper. It does not end well.
No.
I had a query. I'm going to put this poll out on Twitter. There was a video that was released of Koch's family with the mascot going to their house and presenting their son with a birthday cake. Is this what happened, Lucy?
Yeah.
It is. Yes. I think Tiger Stripes Dyer turned up at the Cochin residence to carry in young Parker's birthday cake.
Do we know who was in the mascot?
What? I don't understand the question.
What are you talking about?
Sorry,
it was just the mascot. Yeah.
It's a tiger, Rana.
Forgive me. I'm mistaken.
Anyway, I decided I was watching that and I was very nervous because I was thinking this could go – there was lots of other little kids at the table. I thought this could go – one of two ways. Not everyone likes the mascot, even though they might be intrigued by it, but this world is broken up into two types of people, and it's more important than star sign. There's those people who cry when they see the mascot for fear, and those people who cry because they love it so much. I think we all know which camp I'm in. But Nicole Hayes has some family members who are still to this day terrified of mascots, and I have seen children absolutely lose it with fear. The mascot is terrifying. The thought of a mascot coming into a residential property, I've got to be honest, is quite confronting, and holding a naked flame in a cake. I was nervous that whole time. That is not the natural habitat. I'm not sure that mascots should be going into people's homes.
The only home they should be in is Mascot Manor. We established this.
Yes. And don't you think that it is like minimal appearances from mascots? They shouldn't just be wheeled out willy-nilly. You could see them from afar or at an open training, but then that's it.
They need big spaces.
Yes. And I used to walk around with Tiger Stripes back in the day. That was one of my jobs, to walk around with Stripes. It was genuinely terrifying because you never knew which kid was going to erupt and which kid was going to love it.
Would you say it's 50-50 in the world split between the crying and the not crying?
Definitely. I think you're onto something.
I saw Humphrey Bear once as a child, and it made me very upset.
Really?
He was just too big. It was just too big and too scary. Yeah, it was at a ballet concert. It was terrifying for me.
I have a lot of mascot discomfort, all I have to say.
I'm putting that, there'll be a Twitter poll later today. All right, let's roll into other business before the mascots walk through the door of our houses. Lucy, do you have some other business?
Yeah, overnight we saw a record-breaking attendance at the Euro final, 87,192 people, the all-time most attended match of any Euro final tournament. How good was it?
Love to see
just
it.
Listening to that crowd roar. Oh, well done, England.
I saw someone on Twitter talking about how much they've loved this game, but for so long just never thought it was possible to see that kind of a crowd for women, and just the deep, deep emotions that it brought out. Just beautiful.
So beautiful. In other news, Aaron Phillips has just been named the captain of Port Adelaide for going into the next season. Totally unsurprising, but she looks very happy about it. What a great person to be the captain. I feel like it was a total no-brainer, but is she the first captain that's been announced for one of the new teams, I think?
I think so.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't think any others have been announced. It will happen. I know that all the launches for those teams for season 7 are all coming up, so I imagine we'll be hearing more and more news. But congratulations to Erin. How lucky that they get to have her. We got some news coming out of Frio that wasn't great, Rana.
No, unfortunately, Cara Antonio is out for the season for hamstring surgery, which is such a blow for all of us who are huge fans of hers. But go well, Cara.
And finally, last week, like we announced, we're having a live show, which I'm very excited about. Rana, what's the name of our live show?
Inside the Chat Group.
It's very exciting. We've had a couple of meetings about it, and it's just been silly. It's just been so silly. It's going to be a silly night, and I really hope that people will come along. Tickets are free. You just need to register for them.
You got to get there. It's going to be basically a peek behind the curtain as to who we are and what we do, and I slightly worried.
BYO gifts. Not gifts, gifts.
And we're really looking forward to seeing anyone who can get along.
Yeah.
Can I say I was at your very first live event as a listener. That was one of the best nights, and it really made me look at all of you and go, God, I wish we were friends. And maybe I manifested, and now I'm talking to you about mascots. It's kind of amazing.
There was a lot of manifesting that night. In fact, all four of the additions to the sanctum were there that night in one way or another. And Shelley also manifested, because she actually took photos of herself in all these different positions and tried to Photoshop herself into our poster. She totally manifested and ended up becoming a member of the sanctum. And Julia was in the audience that night, and Tess was our producer, and so she was on stage with us that night. Anything can happen. Just saying, Tiger Stripes Dyer. We don't have enough mascot diversity in the pod. Is there any other news, or are you guys ready to wrap this up and get out of here?
I think we're ready to say go footy.
Oh, okay. Do you want to count us in, Lou?
I'd love to. 3, 2, 1.
Go footy.
I forgot to say it.